So we're in Hilchot Deot, and we're in Perek Vav Halacha Tet. Mi shechata alav chavira. So somebody did you a wrong. Okay? Let me ask you a question. Somebody does something wrong to you. Do you think that you're obligated to give him tochacha? Now think about this answer. And if you think that you are or you're not, you have to explain why. Yeah.
I mean, from my personal experience, usually if someone does something wrong to me, it depends what it is, and sometimes I'll just, you know, I'll be annoyed, but I won't even, like, mention it to them, just because I don't want to, you know, bother with it, so.
Well, do you think that's right?
I mean, so, yeah, no, I have to ask myself, would I be obligated to do so? I don't think you're obligated, because I think that's...
Well, make me a case, anybody, for why you would be obligated and why you wouldn't be obligated.
You would be, because if nothing else, he needs to be told, or he needs to be.
He might not even know he did
something that makes somebody else feel wrong. And then, the case for why you would not be obligated to is because ultimately you're the one who would just be making him uncomfortable. And I mean, I think he stands more to gain from being told than to lose.
If you're doing tochacha
right,
if you do it right, let's say somebody's sitting at the table and he insults you, and you feel really insulted. He doesn't even know, like what you just said, he doesn't even know he did something wrong. Whereas that's even worse. So if you're a good friend, and if you're close to him, and if he knows it's coming from a good place, and if you know how to do it, then wouldn't you want to help him discover that he shouldn't do that sort of thing? Because the next time he'll do it to someone, he'll pop him in the mouth.
Saying, shut up, you're blank, 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 blank.
Right.
I also think that...
The response, I mean, so what? Now we're getting that anything from your column.
Well, now we're talking.
You said something about you. You say something
about
No.
One second. You just forgot the last three shiur we had in Echos Tocha. Who says that's what Tocha is?
Yeah.
Tocha is not shut up, you did something wrong. Tocha is you. If someone has truly given you an experience of what it means to be muchach, if someone gives you Tocha or approves you the way they're supposed to, then you walk away feeling that guy really cares about me. You feel closer to him. And you genuinely want to change. It bothers you that you missed and did this thing.
You can do that from the guy screaming a bunch of swear words at you, too. You can gain the same thing.
Okay, that would be a special guy. That's not my shita, but okay, right? But you understand.
I actually say you would be obligated only because he says chavero. Like, maybe I would say you're not necessarily obligated for everybody, but for someone you call your chaver, maybe you would be obligated. And
well, his whole premise here is chavero.
So, yeah. But is he, and then when you say ben adon chavero, does that mean you have to be obligated for everybody you know, or just like...
So I guess the higher the level you are, the more, the wider the circle.
Yeah, like if these are my friends that I'm like more close to already, then I think I would do it. I would actually feel like obligated to...
Like as much as I love you guys, you can't expect me to be as close to you, let's say, as I am to my children, right? So that's why when it comes to giving tocha to my children, I know I have to give them tocha. My only question is how. When it comes to you guys, I struggle sometimes with whether I should or I shouldn't. I'm not sure that I did it right? But that's a chisaron. That's a flaw in my relationship with you, because a person should be able to get close enough that he shouldn't struggle with it anymore, right? Does that make sense? Okay. So having said that, yeah?
But I think it also depends, one thing I even brought up, on the actual action itself. I don't think we've really addressed that, because let's say it's something that really shouldn't reflect the person's personality. It's literally just something they didn't know what's wrong or something like that. I don't think it's necessary, unless the person is highly sensitive. I don't think you need to go through all these extra steps to make sure that you're doing it in the right way. I think it's much more only relevant when the action is like...
Give me an example. Because I can't think of one.
I used to take my tefillin off before Shir Shalyom.
Okay.
And Rabbi came over and said you should really keep it on until after Shir Shalyom.
Okay.
Not the end of the world. Doesn't need to pull me aside, ask me how my day is going, develop a relationship.
No. But let's say, can you think of an example of a way in which someone would say exactly the same thing to you, a rabbi, in shul,
in a wrong way,
and it would bother you?
Yeah. You stupid idiot, what are you doing?
No. I said, he would say it to you exactly the same way, you know, you really shouldn't, and it would bother you.
Say it in front of the room with that sort of hair.
Pardon?
Say, yo, Mikey.
No. Again, he said it in exactly the same way.
If he's doing it in exactly the same way?
Yeah.
And it's the same exact situation?
It's not the same situation.
So what's different?
The difference is where... I'll give an example. Suppose you get to Penn.
That'd be weird.
Right? Okay, you go to Binghamton. Fine. And But no, you go to visit Penn for Shabbos.
Sure.
Okay? And you go visit Penn for Shabbos. And because, you know, I don't know, one of your friends, Aaron Wilson, is in Penn, I think he's going to Penn, right? So you go to visit him for Shabbos. They start a week before you do, so you go up there, it's the first Shabbat of Penn, you don't really know anybody. And you get there Friday, and you decide you're still in super Shabbat Tzaddik mode. So you go to Minyan in the morning, Friday morning, right? And the JLI rabbi is there, and there's like 11 guys. And you've never met this guy before, right? And at the end of Minyan, he hasn't said hello to you, he hasn't said anything to you, whatever, but he's a nice enough guy. He sees you took your tefillin off before Shir Shoyam. And he walks over to you and he says, listen, you know, you really shouldn't take your tefillin off before Shir Shoyam. You should wait till the end of davening. Same thing. Same thing as Mir of Noam would say. I could imagine at least the possibility that you might be a little annoyed. Like, who is this guy? He doesn't know me. That's what you say. You don't say hello. Don't take your tefillin off. Like, it might even annoy you. In fact, you might dafka the next time you go visit, take your tefillin off before Shmoneh Esrei, just to show him who's boss, right? What's the difference? It's not in how he says
that's
it.
That's going to show, man.
Yeah. It's not in... I knew you'd pick up on the important part of the example, right? It's not to show him... It's not that... The issue is not in the way he said it. The issue is there's no relationship leading up to it. He developed a relationship with you for weeks or months before he said that to you. That's what I mean. There is a right way and a wrong way. How extreme the difference is, that depends on the example. You know, like sometimes you could barely imagine a different way to do it, but yeah, fine. Right? Okay, so then let's assume that we've arrived at a maskana that really you should want to give tocha to a person, even if it's difficult for you, and you should feel obligated to give tocha for you. Okay, so does that mean, you ready for this? Does that mean that if somebody does wrong something to you and you just let it go, that you're wrong?
It depends.
Okay.
We're working on the assumption that you really should do it if something good stands to come out of it.
Right.
If nothing, I don't know what the example would be.
Well, wait a second, If you're doing Torahcha and you're doing it right, I would assume the result is that it almost has to be good that comes out of it.
Right. But let's say, maybe I should think of an example before I say this. But let's
okay,
say,
go ahead.
And try to think of a bad day to prepare only once ever.
You said Birkas Achama wrong, and you were 55 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying all I'm saying is if it's not impossible for the person to change. You know, like let's say you know I'm a righty, and I'm putting tefillin on my right arm, and you should say like, you know, I see you right with your right hand. You should really be putting tefillin on your left arm. And we have a really good relationship, and you're pulling me aside, doing a good, not in a prepared manner. And then I say, oh, well, if I touch anything against my left arm, it'll explode. Then, like, I don't know. I apologize for ever speaking.
No. Look, I'll give you an example of something that you don't think is going to happen again. Okay? No, I'll give you something that's going to happen.
Yeah.
You don't think it's going to happen again. It's the best example I can think of, and you'll see that even so, I think Tocha works. Imagine that it's a month before your bar mitzvah. Now that's a unique situation because you've entered Gil Chinuch, and 30 days before your bar mitzvah, you're actually in Gil Chinuch according to all the poskim. So that puts you in a unique situation. So you're used to talking in between tefillin shalosh, tefillin shel yad, and maybe nobody's ever said anything about you because they just want you to enjoy putting on tefillin. But now you have a halachic issue with your rabbanon doing it. So somebody comes over to you and says, you know, and you're it's the last day of summer camp. And one of the counselors is never going to see you again. So he'll come over to you and say something to you. It's silly. Like, it's done already. What, you're going to be done with Gil Chinuch. Maybe you're not even going to put tefillin on for the next 30 days. It's still valuable for a person to realize that there's a mistake that he made, that there's something he has to fix. No? Make sense? Right? So if you know, I have to do this. If you know, there we go. If you know, Baruch Hashem. If you know that really you should want to do Tocha, so somebody does something to you and you let it go. I don't know. Like, let's say I'm sitting at the table. This is an example I gave you the last couple of weeks. Sitting at the table, there's five pieces of schnitzel, there's six of us at the table. And there are now two pieces left. And there's three guys that sit down. And I sit down and two guys, right, they both grab the piece of schnitzel. And it's clear that because they grabbed the piece of chicken, they didn't offer, they didn't say, you know, we should have that. What really should happen is, no, you take it, you take it, you take it, you take it. We don't do that. It's just I take it. So now I realize they did something wrong. So if I'm correcting them because I want a piece of chicken, so that's not how to give tocha, better off not to give tocha. But if I'm correcting them because I care about them, and because I want them to learn sensitivity, so that should be a good thing. So let's say I don't. Let's say I just say, you know what, like, I'm just going to let it go. Azav, I don't bear them any malice, I don't care, they didn't realize. So have I done a wrong thing? Yeah?
Well, one thing we spoke about, you know, with Rabbi Aaron about Netzach and Hod, like,
yeah.
Maybe you have, like, all the right intentions to be doing all the right thing. You just want to, you know, help everybody have an opportunity. But I think maybe one of the things to consider is that they'll just overwhelm them. Like, they might take your talk about, but sometimes it's just too much. You know, if you constantly are telling your friends, like, you did this wrong, and, like they know that you should.
I don't know, but I want you to understand. I want you to understand. What you're describing is tocha that's being given in a manner that's not quite proper.
Even if it keeps getting people to be better and better and better.
It doesn't matter. If you're doing it to such a point where you're getting them to be annoyed with you, then that's problematic. You're not letting go of it because you're afraid you're going to annoy them. That's legitimate. You're letting go of it because lach bat lacha, like, you don't care. So let it go. Life's too short. Let's just have a nice lunch, right?
So then it's kind of contradictory questions. It's like saying, is there ever a time where you shouldn't do something that...
No, is it a problem? Is it, despite the fact that there's a mitzvah to do it, are you allowed to let go of it? Like, this is a very serious question.
Depends on the situation.
Pardon?
Depends on the situation.
What do you mean?
Well, you can decide, okay, this is a complete stranger, but I want to, you know, I want to, I have to give, I have to rebuke, you know, give yourself a talk, and, but only because it's a very extreme situation, such as selling heroin to kids on a street corner.
Right.
So that's you might want you, that's something that you might not want to let go of. If he's on the street corner also doing something illegal and selling imported product from China, like black market stuff. Or, you know, there's different, you know, different examples. Like, you might not, depending on the it depends on what exactly the situation is, and it depends who you're talking to. It depends who you're talking to, if it's a complete stranger, what your relationship is. As you said, like, if you, how much you care about them, how much you don't care about them, if it's your relative, non-relative, you know, that depends. It varies.
Okay, so let's see what the halacha says. Okay? Mishachata alav chaviro. No, I do agree with that, but I think it's not just a question of it depends. In other words,
it varies.
There are two ways to look at this. One way to look at this is that you don't have the right to say I'm not going to give tocha. People do that, but it's not the ideal. But if that's true, then that makes it very difficult. That means that anytime you see an opportunity to help another person, you really should be doing it. That's exhausting. How do you find the balance?
That's what I'm saying. It varies.
Every time I'm sitting at a table, I have to develop a relationship with a person so I can teach them that they're supposed to make a bracha and a motzi. Every time we get up in the morning, I'm supposed to make a relationship with all the people in my dorm so I can teach them to get up in time for minyan. Like, at a certain point, nobody wants to see you anymore.
It shouldn't be that way.
Pardon?
It shouldn't be that
way. Yeah.
What shouldn't be like that?
It shouldn't be that every time. It should depend.
But why not? What a mitzvah. You know what? I had breakfast recently with a guy, and maybe you met him. His name is Jeff Seidel.
Yeah.
You know Jeff, right? Okay. So he has a student information center. He has a student information center, and he does unbelievable stuff. He picks people up at the Kotel. They live in the Rova. He actually gives an incredible tour of the Muslim quarter. He's an amazing guy. This guy, every Friday night, basically, is fulfilling the mitzvah of Tochacha. He's going down to the Kotel, and he's saying, I really want to tell these people that they're Mechal Shabbos. They should keep Shabbos. But I can't tell them that they should keep Shabbos because I have no relationship with them. I'm going to go develop a relationship with them. That's what he does. He goes out to the Kotel, he meets them, he schmoozes with them, he chaps them. And then by the end of the conversation, he says, you know, would you like a place for Shabbos? And nine times out of ten, people say, well, what do you mean? He says, no, I'll set you up a place to eat. What, like with people I don't know? Yeah. Well, people I don't know would invite me for dinner? Yeah, sure, it happens to you all the time. People freak out that they'll just show up at somebody's house, we've never met them before, the table is set, waiting for them. Like, we don't appreciate that, right? You go to Shul, right? You live in Albany, right? So if there was some kid who showed up, some person who showed up, and he'd never been to Shul before, everybody would recognize he's not there. Somebody would invite him over Shabbos, right? For sure, I hope, right?
My Shul definitely.
Right. I was like that in my shul also, right? So we take these things for granted, right? But I was once. Okay, but that's how a shul should be, if you ask me. If a stranger could walk into your shul on a Friday night, especially someone who has no place to go, especially someplace who has no. I remember once, Chashi and my older brother and I, we went touring through Europe. And went to Paris, and we bought like some canned goods, whatever. It was going to be depressing, like to go sit in some hotel room. We couldn't afford like the restaurant, whatever it was. We were doing the backpack thing. So we said, you know what, we'll go to shul, but we'll dress in such a way that it's obvious that we have nowhere to go. Like, I wasn't going to go in a suit. So we wore like, you know, like a Lacoste white shirt instead of a regular white shirt. And, you know, put my kippah like a little back on my head. And sure enough, right? And I couldn't bring myself to wear jeans on Shabbos, but I wore like khaki pants. And sure enough, you know, so somebody came over and invited us for dinner. Right? It was only when we cleaned up from dinner and we were helping like bring dishes in and we had this amazing Shabbos dinner, even though they could barely speak English and we spoke no French, right? Little Hebrew, little English, we made it work, right? We did a lot of singing. And at the end of the evening, I suddenly noticed that when I cleared their plates, they had had no meat. Both the mother and the father had no meat. They gave us their portion. Blew my mind, right? And I'm a firm guy. I'm used to people inviting over Shabbos. So we're sitting once with a guest that we had, that we invited home, like an Israelite, not an Israelite, just somebody in shul, whatever, who had never, not an Efrat, who had never had jobs before. My parents do this all the time. And this girl was like in awe. And finally she said, like, how did you know that somebody was going to come? Like, how did you, like the table was set for extra people? So my father would always say, like, when I was growing up, well, you know, we were hoping we'd get lucky and we'd have guests. So it blows people's minds. Blows people's minds, right? So this guy is basically going down to the Kotel, and he's fulfilling the mitzvah of Tochacha all the time.
Do you realize that's his intention?
Pardon? I don't know if he... Who says Tochacha and Achanas Torchim are wrapped up in each other?
That's an incredibly cynical way to look at it.
That's exactly
what I was thinking. Why is Tochacha not a great thing?
I don't think that's what he's not saying words. I hope that's not the way he's
talking. Let me give you an example this way. I think that, and this is why I'm glad I brought this up, because I think you still have a perception, as much as we've spoken differently, that Tocha is like you got to rip someone. That's not what Tocha is. Let me ask you a question. Do you think my agenda this year is to get you into a pair of tits? I'm curious what you think.
No.
You don't think that, right? Is my agenda to get you into a pair of tits?
No. Be upset if it happened, though.
Right. Why?
In fact, I'd say you'd like it.
I'd love it. I'm honest about it. Why? Because you come in here, and I don't blame you for not wearing tits. If your relationship with
your friend,
if that's how I made money, we'd be in bad shape. If your relationship is if my relationship with tits was your relationship with tits, I wouldn't wear tits either. And it pains me to meet people who have this enormous opportunity to have a deep relationship with such an easy mitzvah, and they miss it. And I want to share with you what I find beautiful about tzitzis, about tefillin, whatever. Why? That's a form of tochacha. Why am I willing to spend all this time? Why is Rav Noam, Rav Josh, why am I willing to spend all this time sharing with you all this stuff? You know how many other things I could do in my life? Spend all this time just to share with you what we find beautiful about Judaism, right? That proves that we actually care about you. We care about you before we ever met you. That's what Tochacha is. Tochacha proves that Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh, that Jews care for one another. I don't know if you remember this. When we had this discussion on Parshat Vayeshev, and we were talking about whatever the whole story of Yehuda and Yosef, and one of the questions we had was, Reuven comes to Yaakov and says, take my children, right? Take my children, and if I don't bring yours back, kill them. And Yaakov doesn't say this in the pasuk, but says, you know, the equivalent of, okay, loser, no, that's not the way to do it, right? Don't give me my child by taking my grandchildren. It's not what I'm interested in. All of a sudden, Yehuda waits a little till they're hungrier, and then he says, Anochi avdecha arev et hanar. I will be responsible. I will take care of this boy, Binyamin. Anochi arvenu miyadit vakshenu. I will be a rev. So what does that mean? And Yaakov listens to him. Why does Yaakov listen to him? How come Yehuda carries the day? So the Chazal say, Yehuda introduces a concept that's a new concept, the concept of arevut. Kol Yisrael arevim zebazeh. Responsibility. But what does that mean? So, you know, did you ever have a milrav yet? Have you gone to town and had a milrav? You know what a milrav is, right?
Maybe we got like
You don't know what Murav is? Oh my gosh! Listen, before you leave Eretz Yisrael, you have to have a Murav, yeah. A Murav is like it's in a big lafa, and it's not just falafel and pitot and everything. It's unbelievable, right? It's like, no, it's true. When you get up to Shamayim, in Gan Eden, that's what they're serving, a Murav. It has to be, right? Yeah, it's a chafla yala chazavt, right? So what does it mean? Why is it called a Murav? Why is Cholent? Why is one second? Murav. Okay. So. Trust me, it's called a Murav, right? Why is it a Murav? It's all mixed up. Cholent is a form of Murav. It's mixed up. What does real Erevut mean? It's so mixed up, you can't tell the difference between this and that. It's just a Cholent. Right? When you look at the cholent in the pot, you don't really see the bean, the potato, whatever. If it's a good cholent, it's like a broth soup. It's all mixed up in one, right? That's really what it's supposed to be. So Yehuda is saying, it's not that there's me and there's him, right? How is Yehuda allowed to put his life in danger to say, take me as a slave for Binyamin? It's not so partial. Who says he's allowed to take his place? The only reason he's allowed to do that is because he's not taking Binyamin's place. He is Binyamin. And Binyamin is his. When you don't wear tzitzis, it's like, I'm not wearing tzitzis. When I walk down the street and I see somebody driving a car in Shabbat, I don't feel chas v'shalom anger. I feel pain. Because if one Jew is driving on Shabbat, we're all driving on Shabbat on some level. And it pains me. And why does it pain me? It pains me because I care about him. Because I think, well, this guy is missing something special. That doesn't mean that I judge him, because he also has something special. I don't know what he's doing on that day. Right? That's arivut. That's tochacha. So if you have an opportunity to share with someone, and you just ignore it, you're missing an opportunity to make the world a little closer, to demonstrate your love for another human being. So then are you allowed to let go of it? So that's what makes the Rambam here so interesting. Because now the Rambam says, right, if a person sins against his neighbor, he doesn't want to give him tocha. He doesn't want to say anything to him. Because this guy was a simpleton. Like, imagine you see a guy, and I don't know, he's drinking. And you want to explain to him, you know, sort of the dangers of drinking in terms of alcoholism, in terms of the chemical effects on brain cells, whatever. But this guy's sitting there like, you know, he looks like he's drinking, right? So you say, like, okay, why don't we have a discussion with this guy? Like, he's, you know, he's Vinny, he's on the subway. Like, what are you going to do? He's a boor. Or he was mentally impaired. Suppose you see a retarded boy, and he's like smoking a cigarette, and you say to yourself, like, what, he's retarded. Like, how am I going to help him understand not to smoke a cigarette? I don't have that capability. I'm not going to be able to help him, right? Like, what are you going to do, right? So umachalo. Now, by the way, we're not talking about that. That's not a good example. It's not, the good example is not that he's smoking a cigarette. The good example is he's sitting next to me. He walks in, he sits there, he's smoking a cigarette, he's puffing in my face. Right? He's I don't know, he's banging, and I'm trying to sleep. So he's chote on me, right? That's what he says, chata alav. And this guy sees that he's like a simple guy. He's like, he's not going to get it. He's mentally challenged, right? So he's mochel. He says, okay, I'm going to let it go. So on the one hand, he's missing an opportunity to help a person, to teach a person. Right? And machalo bilibo, he forgives him in his heart. Velo stamo velo uchicho. Now this is an interesting word. What do you think that means, velo stamo? Do you remember this from anywhere? Lo yistamenu yosef, right? Lo yistamenu yosef, what? Pardon?
Comes from the shorash stam.
It comes from the word. That's a good question. I actually brought a concordance because I wanted to look that up. You want to see if you can find it, anybody? Yeah, see if you can find it. Shin Tet Mem, right? We see this in Halacha Vav. If you look back, If you look back in Halacha Vav, right? Look at the beginning of Halacha Vav on page 125 in this version. Kashe yechta ish leish lo yistamenu v'yishtok. So we interpreted that then. You shouldn't hold it in. You shouldn't allow it to become a rage. Don't keep it in. Don't bottle it up. How does he translate it here? Don't remain silent, right? Don't keep it in. And if you keep it in, that's like Amnon, right? Who didn't speak. So here he says, "Velo stamo." You don't keep it in. You don't hang on to it. You let it go. Harezo midat chasidut. That's a chasid. I don't get it. If tochecha is such a great mila, if you're helping another person, you're showing them that they can grow, you're demonstrating that you care for them, all that stuff, then why would it be a midat chasidut? Why would it be a good deed to let it go?
Midat chasidut or midat, you can't stay in the middle, so you're going to...
Well, right. So we said in Perek Beis, I think, that midat chasidut is when a person can't stay in the middle, so he goes to an extreme. So this would be an extreme. Well, imagine that. Let's take a super extreme version of someone doing something to you, right? Like you're sitting. Pardon. Well, then you're done. Then it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu that has to. No, I'm saying within the realm of possibility, you're sitting in the base manners. You're sitting in the base manners, right? And and he's annoyed because you made noise last night when you came in. Okay. You came in last night and you made noise at 1 o'clock. He was asleep. You woke him up. Okay, that's not good. But he's raged, and you have no idea he's raged. You're sitting in the base manager, you woke up, he overslept, because you kept him up in the night, fine. So now he comes to the base manager, and he's so angry, you, what the heck's the matter with you? You made noise last night. You say, made noise, I just got into bed, I was quiet, the light was out, I didn't even turn it on. Yeah, you made so much noise, and he grabs my cup of hot tea, and he throws it in your face. So, like, you'd be sitting there like this, you'd be like, right? And most normal people would say, are you out of your mind? Like, you'd tell him something. What's wrong with you, right? But you are super chassid. And you are able to say, Hashem wants me to experience tea on my face. I need to figure this out. And you know what? I must have done something wrong to get this person so upset. And so, I'm going to let it go. And you forgive him in your heart. Remember, we're not talking about that you keep it in and you're enraged, but you don't want to get into a fight. We're talking about that in that moment, you can just... The yin and the yang come together and we are all fine, right? So that's a chassid. That's a high level. Is that a good thing? Why is it a good thing? And most importantly of all, what does that teach you about tocha? If that's a good thing, what does that teach you about tocha? Yeah?
I mean, I think the main thing it teaches about tocha is that you're doing tocha because you're mad about something. You're doing tocha to help another person. Because when you...
No. Think about this. If the purpose of tocha is to help the other person,
right.
A person who does that needs some help. So why would it be such a midah chassidut for you to let it go?
Because you realize that this came from Hashem, and therefore
now that's how you get to what I'm talking about. Like, what could the purpose of tochecha be if there's a value to the fact that I let it go?
It seems to say that tochecha is not only just getting them; it's like you getting tochecha does something for you,
and also sometimes, yeah, helps you not get over it.
Part of the purpose of tochecha is not only tikkun. The purpose of tochecha really is to remove enmity from the world. To make sure that fences don't go up. So if you can remove the enmity on your own, pardon?
That's the letter going. Something more important than just getting them to...
Right. If you can remove enmity on your own, that's a good thing. Like, most of us need to give tochecha, not only for the other person, for ourselves.
Like, I can't remove the enmity unless they stop.
Right. Think about the example in Halach Vav, Avshalom. Right? So, Avshalom, it was a problem that Avshalom didn't say something to David. Why? Because he kept it bottled up. But if he wouldn't have kept it bottled up, it would have been fine. He never corrected David HaMelech's flaw. But the bigger picture is, tochecha allows us to let go of this anger, to let go of this stuff, so we don't have stuff. It allows me to become who I'm meant to become. That's the whole purpose of Hilchot Deyot. How do you become the purpose you're meant to be? How do you become a better human being? How do you become ethical? Right? So a higher level on a certain level is that you can actually get to a point, if you think about it, where you don't need to give tocha. Now here it gets interesting. But you're with me here. Some guy comes into your room, you have a roommate, and he loves to blare his music on Shabbos morning and wake you up at 8 in the morning to rock bands that say, you know, I don't know, Jesus Loves You Baby, right? So that would be a challenge for me on a Shabbos morning in a dorm room, right? But imagine if I can get to a point. So the first level I get to a point is, okay, I don't have a relationship with, I'm not ready to give this guy tocha. The second level of relationship is, you know what, I think I could share this with this guy and he would be willing to listen. The third level is, I don't even let, this doesn't bother me. Man, I love you. So if that's how you experience your Saturday morning and it makes you fly, then fly. I'll get some earplugs. And not that I let it go because I'm such a mensch and I don't let on that I'm annoyed. I can mamas get rid of any annoyance that I have. Now, if you can't get rid of that, then you have to give tocha. If you can get rid of that, then you don't have to give tocha. And then you can decide if you're sure that you're going to really get somewhere, then it's worth trying. But if you're not sure, then let it go.
I mean, if it doesn't bother you, just let it go.
I didn't say it doesn't bother you. You decide to let it go so that it won't bother you.
But if it's still bothering you, you haven't let it go.
And then you have to give tocha.
In the example you just gave, should Avshalom have given tocha to David or to Amnon?
Should what?
Should Avshalom have given tocha to David?
Well, the specific example in Tanakh is the tocha he's giving to David.
Why?
Because David HaMelech tells off Amnon, but he doesn't punish him. And he's the Melech. Even though Amnon raped Tamar, Avshalom's sister.
So Avshalom was more mad at David than Amnon? This isn't directly pertaining to Tocha, but...
It is because part of... Because Avshalom's anger stems from the fact, okay, that his expectations of David were higher.
Not that his sisters were
higher. There's a combination. I mean, I'm not going to get too into the story. You could make a case that Avshalom's issue is not Tamar. Avshalom's issue is Avshalom. And if you look in the Psukim, you'll actually find that in the Pshat in the Psukim. And that's why he gets into so much trouble, because it's all about Avshalom. Right. Yeah. Shh. Yeah. Destructive to who? To the person who's committing the error, or to you who's letting it go? Absolutely true.
Yeah, it can also be destructive to the person who's letting it go, too. Because, like, what if someone keeps, doing something wrong to this person who's trying to be a chassid, but then, no, so to him, like, it completely doesn't matter. But to everyone else, it's like, this guy, you know, doesn't stand up for himself. This guy doesn't do this or that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It can seem like he's doing it.
Well, I'll give you a good example. I'll give you an example. And then I'll give you a second example, and you tell me the difference, because I think I would behave differently in these two examples. So, I'm not really makbid. Makbid means stringent or exacting about certain things when it comes to, like, my personal honor, right? Like, I don't really care if, people call me Binny or Rav Binny or Rabbi. I don't like Rabbi Freeman or whatever. So when people call me Binny, I don't really notice it, whatever. My wife sometimes gets annoyed by it because she feels like it's not just about you, it's covered a Torah or whatever. Okay, it's nice for a wife to get annoyed about that for her husband. It's not so cool for her husband to get annoyed about it. Fine, right? So now, let's say that there's a student, right? And I have this all the time. I get an Israelite student. And, they call me Binny. I don't really care. Like, it doesn't bother me. With you guys, I'm not so makbid on it, but the yeshiva environment creates it. I think it's good. I think it's good that you have people that you're learning Torah with, that you call them Rav, and you have a Rebbe, and whatever it might be. But I don't personally need it. Whatever, fine, right? So now, let's say that there's an inyan in Kavara Torah, that there's an issue. Like, I would never call Rav Lichtenstein Aaron. But I promise you, if I called him Aaron, it wouldn't bother him personally. He doesn't need my, guspanka, my approbation to show him that he's a Rav, right? But if I could call Lichtenstein Aaron, there's something wrong with me. So if I'm sitting here and you're calling me Binny, let's say, right? Is it important for me to tell you, you really should call me Binny? So I'm not just uncomfortable doing that because I think it sounds arrogant for me, right? But that's a flaw in me because I really should be more concerned about you developing a healthy respect for Torah. So that's an interesting balance. So me personally, I would let that go. And not only I let that go, I mean, I'm not sure that it ever did bother me that I have to let it go, but it certainly doesn't bother me. I don't remember who does this and who doesn't. It really doesn't bother me. It's not an issue for me. If it would bother me, if I'd be annoyed at some Israelite student, some lady who calls me Binny, then I would have an obligation to try to tell her and find a way and have enough of a relationship that I could say, you really should call. Or find her doing it to some other rabbi so that I could point it out so you would get the message, whatever it might be. On the other hand, I'll give you another example where it would actually absolutely bother me and I would really struggle with it. If I was in college and my roommate was dating a non-Jewish girl, I'd be ripped up about it.
If he was Jewish.
Yeah. That would be the presumption, right. I've had the opposite. We had a girl here who was dating a Jewish boy. A Jewish boy who was dating a non-Jewish girl. And I spent this whole birthright program getting around to the topic and developing a relationship, only to discover on, like, the seventh day that his mother had a giyur that was definitely not la'alacha. So he was really not Jewish. So all of a sudden I realized, I'm trying to convince this non-Jew to date Jewish girls. So I decided, you can date her. You know what? I'm wrong. Go ahead, date her. You're both going. It's okay, right? But if I had a roommate who was dating a non-Jewish girl, I'd be broken up about it. And I don't think you just sit down on the first day and say, you're dating an Italian. Favulus, right? You know, you don't have that relationship yet. So I would put it in order. And I think if a person was in that situation and he had what to say on the topic and he spent a year in yeshiva and he didn't say anything, he just ignored it, and they went through 4 years of college and then this guy went off and he married an Irish girl, I would think that that person made a mistake. I would think that that's very problematic. You don't care enough about that person, right?
That's the situation when I was home. I mean, he's obviously not my roommate.
Yeah. I remember you talked to me about this once, right? Very difficult question, right? And it's much more effort because it's not just talking to him. It's going to figure out what to say to him and learning enough material to be ready for it and whatever. In fact, I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure you're ready for that discussion. That's why you have to stay Shana-Bet, right?
Especially after we had it.
Oh, that's another discussion, yeah? Okay. Right.
That's my point. So one rabbi would make, so the technical rabbi made a point to call him Mister, and was, like whenever he was talking to him in front of us, and like it always bothered us because we were in his class, and like he was, and it was undisputed that he knew more Torah than anyone in school, but he just didn't have to speak.
Right.
So like it would like bother us, but he never like did anything about it, but cause I guess you know it didn't bother him, but like but for us it made.
Well, that's an interesting question. Do you call... Look, in the Haggadah, we quote Ben Zoma, right? Ben Zoma is one of the Tanaim quoted in the Haggadah. He's the one who was... Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was the head of the Sanhedrin, said, Kol Yamai, I always wanted to say, Only Ben Zoma taught us the pasuk of Kol Yimei Chayecha, whatever, right? So that's amazing. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos lists Ben Zoma as one of the two greatest individuals of his generation. That's why he's listed. He's the one at the beginning of the fourth parak who says, Ezeh Ashira Sameach Bechaka. But he's still called Ben Zoma. Now there are rabbis who are generations later, who are clearly not on the level of Ben Zoma, but they're called Rav or Rebbe because they got smicha. So, it's an interesting question why that is, but that happens to make a lot of sense. In other words, the decision to study for smicha and to be accepted by a community as a rabbi makes a difference. Right? Pardon? It's a different smicha, because back then it was smicha midoraisa, right? And achinami, but there's still a concept of smicha. I don't want to get too deep into this for our Q&A on Thursday and on Friday, but and all Shabbos. But the concept of smicha, there is an idea of smicha. There is someone who went through a certain process and is accepted by a community that has certain standards to be called a rabbi is still different from someone who hasn't done that. What the halachic implications of that are, that's a different question. Okay? So you get this. There's two sides to tochacha. And one of the major goals of tochacha is that I should be a healthy person. And if you have anyone in your life that you have negative energy towards, it sucks your soul out. It poisons your system. It's so unhealthy. In those situations, you have to find a healthy way to give tochacha. And so there's two target audiences then of the tochacha. It's who I'm giving it to, and it's myself. Make sense? Yeah? Okay? And so he goes on, right? Right. Lo ikpida Torah ela mastema. The Torah was only makbid on this holding it in, this rage that one holds in. In fact, the Gemara says, well, I think it was Rizera used to say at the end of every day, he had a special tefillah to forgive anyone who wronged him that he didn't think of. Didn't want there to be anybody that he didn't forgive. It's an amazing thing. All right? So let's do this. Let's take a short break. Because I don't want to do this frontally for as long. Yeah, we'll give you guys a break. Second.